Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTube, hi, thank you for your support. Nikias, playing a little bit of a road game. Happy video game of football day to you. But otherwise, it is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Just a couple of bookkeeping notes, more so for the YouTube audience or for the folks who are watching, but just for everyone. It is a road game for us. We are both in Vegas right now. Very fun here for some summer league things. Also some sports business classroom things. Get to teach a couple of courses. Going to be a lot of fun with Steve and I. Always good to see him. But with that being said, as we've had to prep for SBC things, we're going to give some early summer league takeaways. It's not going to be 55 minutes of player breakdowns like we would normally like to do. These are very quick takeaways we've got to do so far. We will circle back in a later episode with more thoughts. So if we don't talk about your favorite team or your favorite player, it's likely that we just haven't seen them in depth yet. And so, you know, it'd be easy for us to pull up a box score and say, well, this is what it looks like and give thoughts and fake it. But we don't want to do that to y'all. So just wanted to give the quick disclaimer at the top.
That's not going to stop people, Nikias.
Well, fair enough. I just wanted to, you know, wanted to be transparent with folks. Like, hey, we've seen some stuff. We haven't seen everything yet. Just want to talk about what we've seen, what's popped our eyes so far. With that, we can start with the top of the draft class. Zachary Risacher has played 2 games with the Hawks so far. 18 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists and a block against Washington. The battle with him and Alex Sarr, we'll talk about him a little bit later. 11 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists and a block against the Spurs yesterday as we record on this Monday morning on the West Coast, which is very interesting as an East Coast guy. But for Zachary, for me, he's showcased some really nice flashes offensively. Like, I think the big thing, the primary note that I had with watching these first couple of games is that I am really going to enjoy watching him play off of Trae Young, assuming that that happens. We got an entire offseason to go, and I'm sure we're going to have some trade chatter with Atlanta still. But assuming Trae is still there, I think he's going to have a lot of fun playing off of him. Because you can see when he is off the ball or spaced on the wing and someone else is driving the basketball, like, he's a very quick decision maker. I think he's able to get to a shot cleaner. And with the shot itself, it's not like he needs a lot of room to get it off. He has a very high release point, has nice touch on the shot as well. And so, like, some of the self-creation flashes, like, there was one that I clipped from that Wizards game. He's on the right wing. He kind of goes jab step into, like, a rip into a shot. It's like, okay, he doesn't have to get into 6 different dribble moves to create separation. He doesn't feel like a high separation guy in isolation right now. And I don't think he's going to be tasked with doing that a bunch. But I think because of how high his shot release is, he's not going to need that much room. And thus, it's encouraging to me that he was able to get to as many self-created threes as he was. And those were pretty clean looks for him. And once he's able to play off of Trae or just a better ball handler in general, I think he's going to have some fun openings to attack. Like, he showcased some really nice drives, particularly in transition. He got put some nice finishes on tape through these first 2 games. So I was encouraged. Like, again, I do not project him to be some star one-on-one creator. And there wasn't that many of those kind of flashes from what I've seen so far. But from what I'm slotting him in to be with the Hawks year one, like, he kind of passed for me. Looked good offensively.
I would say that probably the number one thing that stood out to me with him is the versatility that he showcased. As far as different ways that you can use him on and off ball. So I think I was a little bit, it was fun to watch him get some of those dribble handoffs reps, get some of those pick and roll reps, get downhill, look smooth in that area. That's a positive, especially with how Atlanta has wanted to play under Coach Quinn, being able to mix in some post-ups, being able to shoot. So I think just having that kind of totality is going to help him from the start to where you can use him in different ways. And he can kind of play off people. But if he does get those kind of reps, it's going to be good to go. So you kind of look at, like, the growth of Jalen Johnson this year. This isn't apples to apples, but if you have more people that can kind of make plays, make shots, that's going to help your overall offense. And I think that's going to help everyone do well. So I think that's probably the number one thing that stood out to me.
I got you. And I'm glad you touched on the usage on and off the ball. Because, like, something that popped in that Wizards game in particular, like, they went to him as a screener a few times. There was just some traditional, like, ghost screening stuff. They went just legit inverted pick and roll with him a couple of times. It's like, huh. It's interesting that they're already putting him in these kind of positions. Because I think, again, if he's playing off of someone like Trae Young, like, I'm sure they're going to be, at a bare minimum, they're going to run double drag. And if you can use him as the first screener to get a switch or just to create some kind of confusion early on in the offense, that should help him. And as I think about like what he looks like as a second side attacker, stuff like that, if they are going into double dragon, you switch the first screen and now you have a smaller defender on Zachary, like it may make it a little bit easier for him to get to, if not his spots altogether, at the very least, he'll be able to get to some cleaner shots with the jumper. And so, like, I like that they kind of sprinkled that stuff in. I'll toss this to you quickly. Did the defense pop for you at all? Was there anything noteworthy about his defense through the first two?
It's summer league, so nothing bad. I'm fine.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Very obvious thing to say, and we probably say this about just about every rookie we talk about on this episode, but you can tell where added strength is going to be helpful for him. Like, I didn't feel bad about any footwork things. I think they're going to try to switch him quite a bit, considering the size and the length that he has. He seems to have good instincts. Chest not as strong as you like for him to be, but again, he's young and he's thin, so going to give that some time. So just seeing like what drive containment is going to look like for him against stronger guys, but that's kind of the only like medium-sized note I guess I had right now.
Here's the one thing with evaluating some of the defense in summer league. You just want them to be outside of the liability zone. Mm-hmm. What's your position look like? What's your activity look like? What's the effort to try and execute what they're trying to do? And then you kind of go from there. Because you got to remember, summer league, it's a crash course to a degree. And some teams focus more on offense and defense. Some teams focus more on defense and offense. And you're kind of going to get a variety. So for me, I would hesitate to just drop the elbow on someone's defense in summer league. You look at, let's go with like Khalil Ware, right? Mm-hmm. First game out, didn't look so great. The positioning was there, but also the drop was too deep, all that kind of stuff. Track the progress is what I would say, as opposed to, you know, hey, you can't guard. Like it's a lot to take away, unless it's very clear they're just getting demolished off the bounce.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, unless it is red alarm type, holy crap, what is this guy doing right now type situation, it's kind of hard to gauge either way. Like, I think it has to be an extreme on either side to take anything fruitful on the defense side with these summer league things. Like, I think back to, funny enough, I was going back through some tweets the other day and watching like the Chet Holmgren debut in Utah summer league. And I was like, oh, this is kind of insane what he's doing already. Like, the defense already looks really good. Like, you get the super high end examples early on, you kind of project for it, but playing a little bit conservatively. But like, again, I like what he saw. I think they are playing, I want to say they're playing Houston later today. I have to recheck the schedule. So that's something we're going to be doing core stuff. So we'll probably miss it live, but I'm excited to see what that's going to look like with Zachary. But any closing thoughts on him? Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, two thumbs up.
All righty. We're going to move right on to Alex Sarr. 12.7 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and 4 blocks against the Hawks in his first game. 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 blocks against Houston in the second. A combined 6 of 16 inside the arc, but that felt more like a shot selection type deal, which could be a criticism in and of itself. But with Alex Sarr, it just feels like summer league is made for his type, at least offensively. If you are like bigs, just kind of have the edge up at summer league, I feel like anyway. If you have a motor on 10,000, like you're going to stand out immediately. And if you are a big with ball skills, you may be able to get some of these opposing bigs in space and just have some fun and put some really fun highlights on tape. And that's certainly stood out in the first game in particular with Alex Sarr. As I was clipping that game on the way to Vegas, honestly, the first thing that stood out to me was like he processes the floor pretty quickly as a passer. At least that was my game one takeaway with him. Like, they are just, if he gets a short rule opportunity or if he's attacking a closeout, he sees the open man, he's hitting him quickly, and the pass is actually pretty accurate. And, like, as I've become more of, like, a pass placement stickler over the last couple of years of watching basketball, anytime a big can nail that kind of thing, ball right into the pocket, ball not with too much velocity to where you're throwing your shoot-off rhythm and stuff like that, that always raises my eyebrow. And Alex Sarr passed that test, at least in the first game. Second game is a little bit more. He did a lot in that second game, both complimentary and derogatory. We'll get to that. But he processes the floor pretty quickly. And like that's encouraging that they could just kind of go into like some split game with him. Or again, if his ball handler sees two and he's in the short roll, the fact that he can quickly diagnose this is the open person, I am hitting this person without much hesitation is a positive. Naturally, in those kind of situations, there is room for, hey, you found an opening. Did you find the best opening? And so, like, there'll be those situations that may pop up for him. So I'm going to keep monitoring that portion. But the passing was fun. He is very comfortable dribbling the basketball, grabbing a defensive rebound and pushing it across half court. again, being able to attack closeouts. He's comfortable facing up, jabbing, and then trying to get downhill. The types of shots that he was creating inside the arc, very jumper heavy, which again, like, I'm just going to keep an eye on that. Like, I don't think that's inherently bad, but I don't want him to lean too much on that portion. But it is encouraging that he at least can get to one dribble pull up inside and outside of the arc. Like, there was a, like a sidestep three in that first game from the left wing from him after Washington flowed to some action to get to him in the middle of the floor, kind of fake the handoff. And he gets to the steps, a sidestep three. It was like, oh, that's all right. That's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. So keep an eye on shot selection, like fluid athletically. The defense is interesting because you see the block shots. He can absolutely high point a shot. He put together some pretty nice reps in drop when Washington went to that with him. You could also see that's an area of growth for him, figuring out how deep he wants to be in the drop. Is he committing too early to the ball handler, or is he giving up the drive too early because he's trying to make sure the lob doesn't happen behind him? So, like, there's some nuances within the drop that he can get better at. And the switching is really where I just want to see more from. Because I don't have a firm opinion on the switching right now. Like, I feel like he moves well enough to be a good switch defender. He had some really nice reps in the Atlanta game. There was also, I wish I could remember who the ball handler was, that just got him on one fake and got to a jumper, and Alisarz just he got broken. I was like, okay, want to see what the discipline looks like, want to see what the footwork looks like. But he's very clearly a talented guy. I think the loudest thing you can take from these first two games is he is absolutely a four, or he absolutely believes that he is a four. Now, whether that's a red flag for you, that's your prerogative, but it's very clear he wants to be more perimeter-based and work outside in. And he showcased enough ball skills to where I feel like he can absolutely do that moving forward.
I think I would agree. The number one thing is he does not want to play the five. So it's interesting. It was either pick and pop or he spaced. I liked it. Was everything kind of felt smooth for the most part. Keeping an eye on how he drives in traffic as teams maybe show help or able to dig. So some of the times where, you can screen for me and pick and roll, but now he rejects into traffic. Do you have the wiggle room in bigger season games, if that makes sense? Mm-hmm. I think it'll be just interesting to see if he's going to be that four. How do teams treat him when he's spaced? Can they run some of the same elbow stuff with him? Is he going to have to depend on other people creating for him? The shot selection is fine. Like, I mean, he gets to it, good footwork, gets to his pull up. How are you going to balance that out with the drives? What kind of shots are the projection wise is where it gets tricky for me. I think the talent and the potential has been shown, but now what does that mean overall? How do they get the most out of it? But again, when they showcase, you know, Koulibaly, we saw his growth. So I think having a young guy with that kind of potential is a positive. Defensively, I like the ability to mix in the switches in the drop. I think that's important to at least give a taste of that. And if he can switch, contain, he's got good timing around the rim. So when he's guarding the low man, he knows when to help. Obviously showed the athleticism to protect the paint, protect the rim. If he has kind of that blend defensively, that may be more important for Washington than, you know, the overall growth of the offensive package, at least right away. Mm-hmm.
I guess on the shot selection front, just on a very basic level, 10 threes for the first two games for him. Like, is that just a product of you get more on-ball reps than you anticipated? Or how often do you think he's going to the three ball in Washington in general?
The pull-up three ball or just three ball in general?
Just three ball in general.
Three-ball in general, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised with today's NBA and with that roster. If he's going to be spaced, hypothetically, those shots will likely be there. So how much does he mix in the three with the two-dribble pull-up if he's able to beat closeouts or they close short? That's where it gets interesting. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of the package, at least at the start.
Okay, makes sense. And the other question I tossed your way on, Sar, how did you feel about his screening?
What do you think?
It was a very mixed bag for me. It was one of those things I ended up tweeting about it in the thread when I was watching the Hawks game. I was like, oh, it's refreshing to see a big, like, get in contact and holding the screen and then flying out of there. Because some of these other rookie bigs that have come out in the last 2-3 years, they want to get out of there, or they just got to flat out get better at screening. Like, our generational rookie from last class was not a great screener when he started the year. So, like, again, it's not a death sentence if you aren't a good screener, but it was refreshing to me early on. Oh, Alisarz kind of nailing this. As that game went on and getting into the Houston game, I was like, oh, he's trying to get out of there now. This is so it's very much a mixed bag. I want to keep an eye on it. If he's going to be at the four, like, I wonder what his screening process is going to be more than anything, because I would imagine Actually, I don't know. That's probably one of the bigger questions I have projection wise with him. If he's playing the four, like what coverages is he getting when he's the screener beyond how good the screen is going to be? Is it just going to be switch? Because I mean, he is a true 7-footer, which is the fun part. And so, like, I would kind of wonder, like, how comfortable teams going to be switching smaller people onto him. They may just dare him to do so, but, like, that's just a question that I have in my head right now. Like, what exactly is that going to look like? And based on what coverage he's... Oh, good.
I would imagine they're going to make him prove it first. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's where it's like, this, how much does the screening matter?
Yeah.
To a degree.
No, that makes sense. If he does see that, then yeah, like I think the slips are going to be more valuable. And then again, to your point, like he's going to have to prove, all right, I got a small guy on me. It can't just be a jumper now. Let me see if I can bury this dude. See what kind of ground I can cover. Create some fruitful shots at the rim. So stuff worth keeping an eye on there, but some really interesting flashes from Alex Sarr. Do you have any closing thoughts or questions? Flip Sarr. All righty then. Moving on, we'll talk a little bit about Reed Shepherd of the Houston Rockets. 23 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks against the Lakers in the opener. 22 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, and a block against Washington. I think it's fair to say he has been the best rookie so far. Again, we're 2.5 days in. We got games happening in about an hour or so as we record right now, so that could change. But Reeves looks good, man. Like, the shooting seems legit. And the touch overall just kind of showcased itself. You've seen some of the deeper threes, some of the logo level or hash level threes that he's taken so far. He's been able to get to nice pull-ups and side steps inside the arc. As a ball handler, I'm keeping an eye on the handle, see how tight it is, what kind of separation he's going to create. So that's something I just want to keep an eye on, learn more about with him, as I am just coming into this completely fresh with Reed Shepherd. But like, I like his setups in pick and roll. Let me lull you a little bit. Let me go this way and then run you into the screen. If you duck under, I am willing and ready to just pull right here since you gave me an extra amount of space. So like the quick decision making as a ball handler popped for me as well. Like I don't want to say spamming, but like he was utilizing a push dribble quite a bit to kind of give him a little bit of extra space. Like I do wonder what that looks like as he faces like the real true blue NBA talent. Like, can he get away with that with teams being more aggressive with their digs and showing early help and stuff like that? Like, will we see turnover issues pop up, or will he be able to navigate areas in that way? Because if he is, he should be able to get to a spot easier. And because of the shooting touch that he has, like, I think he could be a pretty effective inside the arc scorer, even if he doesn't get to the rim a ton. But shooting stood out. He was able to get to his spots relatively well. And the passing was a lot of fun for Reed Shepherd. Really good lay down passer. Good touch and placement on the bounce passes that he would toss. The lofts between him and Cam Whitmore, which I'll talk about Cam Whitmore later in the pod. It's going to be a quick, like, 45-second thing on Cam. Shout out Cam Whitmore. We'll leave it there. I'll circle back. But the passing really popped for Reed as well. Defensively, I think he was mostly fine. I do think there are just going to be general size/wingspan questions with him. Like, how often can you switch him? Can you switch him 1-3 to kind of flatten stuff out? If so, what does that look like? He does seem to have pretty quick hands. So if he can stay attached to drives, I'm sure he's going to be able to bother the base or bother the gathers as folks, get some quick deflections. Like, we saw a couple of those in the first two summer league games so far for him. So if he can hold up reasonably well against bigger players, like, I just feel really good about him. Like, the offense just kind of wowed me from what I've seen from him. He just looked really comfortable, knew what he wanted to do, playmaked well, shot well, got to his spots inside the yard. It's been really good stuff for him so far.
I think the on ball was what stood out to me, being able to operate in pick and roll with comfort, you know, to understand when to take a pull up against the under, when to wait for the rescreen against the under, when to try and attack. It will be interesting because I'm sure if you're a Rocket fan, someone out there is probably squinting and being like, hey, is that Fred VanVleet? But also at the same time, it's a little different when you get this amount of reps and I can go pick and roll. I don't have it. Back out, get another pick and roll. I don't have it, which it's not unfamiliar for the Rockets offense. But at the same time, you may not get that total window to a degree. But I like that part. And I think the fact that he's getting these on ball reps is important to at least showcase that he can do this, which will help Houston overall balance out their lineups. But you know he can shoot, and you know the off ball is going to be there. You can run him off pin downs. He can get to a spot and get to a shot. He can get to a shot and pick and roll. And I think it was more just like, okay, I have space to operate. I can get to where I want to go. I feel comfortable. He never felt just extremely bothered in these games. Mm-hmm. I think that's something where if you're the Rockets, you got to feel pretty good about that.
Okay, I got you. Just very quickly, how did you feel about the defense from him?
I like the way that he competed. I mean, effort's there. Mm-hmm. Are you setting me up so you can tell me how you felt about his defense?
No. Like, I went, again, like, my whole thing is just, what does he do against bigger players? Because, like, I would imagine if they do lean more into, let me back up for a minute. I'm really curious to see what Houston's starting lineup is going to be this year.
Why?
Because they just have a lot of talent. They also have a lot of young talent. It's more what their starting lineup is going to be and just what their rotation is going to be overall. I feel like they can just do a ton of different things.
The rotation part, I get you with. The starting lineup, I think we can take a pretty good guess on what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün. I got a pretty good feeling that's going to be the it's gonna be a bit.
So I guess just general rotation thing. I would imagine they're going to try to ramp up or try to find more minutes for him in. Obviously, Cam's going to want to play. Tari Eason is going to be back, and I'm excited to watch Tari Eason play basketball again. You know, I have Reed Shepherd in the flow. So, like, they can really mix and match with these lineup combinations. So I'm excited to see what Houston's going to look like. Also, just on a general note, the Summer League Rockets have been unfair for a few years now, to be completely honest with you. They just tend to be one of the best watches in Vegas. But Reed really did his thing. So I'm curious to see just what his playing time is going to look like. How often are him and Fred going to play together? There's a lot of things, thoughts in my head on that front. But Reed really impressed me. Again, I say it on the show all the time. Like, I am not Mr. Draft. So, like, Summer League is my introduction to a lot of these folks outside of, like, this is the player archetype. So I have that roughly in my head. But getting to watch Reed, he knew what he was doing out there. It was a lot of fun watching. And just circling back to the defense again, like, I don't anticipate him guarding primary options. If they put him on ones, I'm sure they're going to have a lot of help loaded up behind him. To your point, he competes. And, yeah, I just want to see what it looks like against bigger players. Will he be able to contain? Will he be able to flash his hands and disrupt things? Because if not, then you're looking at a situation where you don't want to put him on speedy point guards. You're also worried about him against bigger wings. And it's like, okay, where do we put him at that point? And so that's what I'm just, again, not finalizing anything. I have a whole lot more read to watch. But that's where I was impressed. Like, okay, he did look comfortable against bigger guys. And kind of disrupting the ball in that area. So that seems to be a positive for me. Any closing thoughts or questions on Reed Shepherd?
No.
All righty then. Well, we hit the UConn division really quickly with Stephon Castle and Donovan Klingon. Both have played a game so far as a recording, and they played against each other. Stephon Castle in that game, 22 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. Donovan Klingon, 4 points, 13 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and 5 blocks in this one. With Stephon Castle, as I felt like he had the better game, the box score kind of indicates that as well. His comfort inside the arc really stood out. Not necessarily new, as just, you know, transparently UConn fan. Not necessarily new, but just the level of poise that he played with. Like, I think it would be very easy in a summer league setting for him to be sped up and just kind of do what he wanted to do. And he would have had license to do so. But, like, he did really play with a pace and a poise that felt beyond his years. Let me set you up with this dribble. Let's run off this screen. Let's get you on my hip. I'm putting you in jail. I'm keeping you in jail. I'm now getting to my spots. I'm reading the big and seeing what he wants to do. Big still retreating. I can get to this floater. Big stepping up and not fully committing. I can sidestep to the right. I can get to a different type of shot. It was a nice and one that he had, I want to say, towards the end of the first half in that Spurs Blazers game. And it's like, okay, that's good stuff. He just played that entire defense like a fiddle. Got a guy up in the air, quick, easy, and one at the basket. And so, like, just watching the interior feel and watching, again, not just him getting to a shot in the situation, but getting to different types of shots inside the arc. And then also mixing in the passes to go with it. Like, I just love that he showcased that blend early on. Now, the shot making is going to be a bellwether for him. The shot in general is going to be a bellwether for him. Got to see where he lands on threes. He was 2 of 6 from three in that opening game. What is the footwork? How clean is the footwork going to be when he's getting into pull-ups? Will he be able to knock down spot-up shots? So it's going to be very important questions. He's not going to have the ball in his hands all the time. So he's going to have to be able to make defenses pay in that regard. So that's going to be worth monitoring moving forward. But with the ball in his hands, even with some of the turnovers, like the fact that he's tossing live dribble skips is encouraging to me. A couple of those got picked off in that game. It was like, okay, he sees it. He felt comfortable throwing it. That can be built upon versus everything is either same side or it is gather the ball two hand. Let me toss it over here. I'm glad that he can get to live dribble stuff and defensively worked his tail off on that end. Wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly worked on it end. Screen navigation felt fine. He did feel a little flat footed off ball when he knew his guy wasn't directly involved, wasn't a threat. It didn't feel active enough for me. But like those are little things that'd be cleaned up, and that could just be straight possession stuff. And this is where that's the problem of dealing with a one game sample in this regard. So we're like, okay, it could just be this one time. It is not a major thing, but that is something that stood out to me watching that game. Just kind of relaxed, when he was off ball, but overall a positive showing for me. And I think if he projects to have that kind of comfort with the ball in his hands, like I think him and Wimby are going to have a lot of fun together.
I think what stood out to add on to that was just the comfort on ball, but also the way that he was able to change speeds how he wanted to. I think he got an M1 in the first quarter, deep drop. I'm taking this space immediately and I'm going to finish. I think it's one of those deals where he's able to kind of not give away where he's going with it. And so even if you have questions about the shot, he had a pull up in that game where it's just like, hey, it looks like the same way I've been coming off all game, but I'm just going to take this pull up. So the footwork being there, the patience being there, you wonder what it'll look like with kind of how San Antonio moves. Will he be able to go quicker? If it's ball movement, do I get a quick attack or does he start a pick and roll? And now does he get off of it real quick? But I think the mindset was there to, hey, I'm going to attack. I'm going to take the space that's given to me. And then we're going to make plays out of it. So it wasn't necessarily an automatic, well, I have space, I need to snake, or I have this, I need to go to my pull up. He just kind of read the defense as the game went on, which is what you want to see. You know, not every shot's going to be there, not every play's going to be made, but if you have that mindset, that's something you can build off of. So I think that's a positive, especially, you know, since he's like, I'm a point guard. Well, you got to go out there and make the plays if that's what you're going to do. And I think that was a pretty good test for him.
No, he did a good job. He did suffer a sprained wrist in that game. He finished the game. But I think he has officially been shut down for summer league. So this is the only bit of gameplay we're going to see from Castle until, I guess, the preseason. So we will see what preseason Stephon Castle looks like. Donovan Clingan, don't want to go too deep on him.
He's very tall.
He is extremely tall. And six stocks is a pretty good bit of business on that front. Three threes for Donovan Clingan was where I was like, wait a minute. Because, like, this, what, like, the 3-point shooting in particular wasn't something that he did in abundance at UConn. And, like, jumpers in general were not a thing that he was taking a ton of. So, like, I wondered how much of this was just game flow / I just want to try this versus any kind of coaching staff emphasis. Hey, let's see if we can stretch this out a little bit. Because it's not like he has, like, a ton of positive shooting indicators. Like, he wasn't an elite free throw shooter in college, anything like that. So I'm really just curious to see, was that just a one game thing, or is this something that Portland's actually working with him about? Because if he can now be pick and roll screener or just a handoff hub and, oh, y'all are playing 10 feet off me, I guess kind of like the, not an apples to apples comparison to borrow your words, but like a Jonas Valanciunas type beat, to where 95% of the time I am just operating as the handoff hub. We're going to the other side. Fine. Okay, it's early first quarter. Y'all are playing 12 feet off of me. I'm just going to take this to let you know I will do it. Like, I wonder if it's going to be that type of situation. So that part for me, defensively, I think one of the questions heading into the draft was just how well is he going to move? There's no doubt that he's going to be a really good drop defender. He's going to be a real presence at the rim. How many different things can he do? Can you bring him up to the level and have him drop back? And can he contain from there? If it turns to a late switch, is he able to just funnel a ball handler to one side and kind of corral things? I don't have answers on that after one summer league game. Something I'm keeping an eye on for sure. In terms of the actual movement ability, he both moved better than I anticipated, but it's still kind of like below the super scheme versatile threshold that I would like for him to have. So that's just going to be, again, something that he has his entire career to figure out. But it is something that I'm at least keeping an eye on with him. Outside of him being tall, did anything pop for you with Mr. Clingan?
Well, to add to the defense, I think in the drop, he showcased some instincts in the in-between area to where I'm dropping back. I know I need to contain. My guard is working, but I can give a little stunt. I can give a little jab and allow you maybe a heartbeat to recover. that's good instincts there. So I think that's a positive for him defensively if he can establish that. When you go to the offensive end, to answer your question about the spacing, the three-point shooting, that may be something, hey, go ahead and let it fly. Let's see what that looks like. This is the environment to go ahead and try that out, because there may be scenarios where he's spaced, depending on who he plays with. I'm interested to see how the roles develop for him, because I think that he made good contact, but the secondary part of that is now, can you get out of the pocket pretty quickly? So if that screen is at the three-point line or above, you might create the advantage as a positive, but you might be late on your roll, as opposed to if he sets those lower angle pick and rolls, and now he's, you know, one, two steps away, he's already in the paint. That's where I think it's okay. That's hard to deal with because, again, he's very large. And so can he handle kind of the different angles, getting out to his roll quicker, finishing? Like, I think he's got the mindset to go ahead and post up and work to rebound. But that's probably where he has to develop a little bit.
I got you. I think it was one of eight inside the arc for him in this game. So not the one of five inside the arc, excuse me, one of eight overall. So not the cleanest in terms of him scoring on the interior, but again, he has plenty of time to work on that. I think the role point is going to be interesting, especially as you project him playing alongside of Scoot Henderson, who you felt his pace again, pick and roll, improve as the year went on. Felt very fast early on. You're starting to see more of the change of pace, stuff like that. We saw some of the growth with Shaedon Sharpe when he was running ball screens, like a little bit more patient. Again, not perfect, still plenty of room to grow, but you saw those shades of things. Not sure what the Anthony Simons status is going to be with Portland by the time the regular season starts. Not sure if he's moved or if he's there. But, like, I think Anthony Simons is going to appreciate the screens at the very least. If they do go super high pick and roll, like, that just may be a... If we're going super high, we're just not really relying on Donovan at that point. We're getting Anthony a one-on-one with this big. If the big is too far back, he's pulling up. If not, we're driving. We could turn this into a late switch. And then maybe, you know, later in the action, this is where you can get clinging some of those post touches. Against a small defender, you get them easier looks like that. So be an interesting setup. And to your point about the front court, like we talked a little bit about Portland earlier in the offseason, as they still have DeAndre Ayton. They still, as of now, have Robert Williams III. They Duarte Reef is still there. I'll shout his name out. But like a lot of front court depth, like, do we see Twin Towers? Do we see Klingon and Ayton together? What does that look like if so? And so to your spacing point, like he's going to, you know, experiment with three ball is going to be fun. But if nothing else, teams likely going to play off of him as they don't treat him as a shooting threat. Let's swing it to Klingon real quick. Let's go right to a handoff with someone that's spaced right beside him. Like he has plenty of experience within all of the fun NBA style things that UConn's offense does and did, kind of operating in that way, going into second side handoff, stuff like that. So I don't think him being on the perimeter as a concept is going to be completely foreign to him, but him taking those shots from the perimeter is interesting to me. I'm not expecting him to be a 40% shooter early on, but if he's able to sprinkle in a made three every other game like that, that gets really interesting for me on top of everything else that he does. So that's where I'm at on Klingon. Any closing thoughts or questions?
Nope.
All righty. Fair enough. We can go rapid-ish fire on the last three here. Rob Dillingham with Minnesota, traded for him a 2031 first, I believe, and another pick to get him in Minnesota. 4 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal in his first game against the Pelicans. 14 points, 8 assists, and 2 steals in the second game that he played. That guy is, if we're just going with the fun scale with ball handlers that you'll see in summer league this year, if he's not number one, he's got to be top three. Like, he just feels like a 2K player come to life with some of the setups and size ups. He is very smooth, very shifty. Shifty is a very popular word to describe Rob Dillingham with the ball in his hands. Can get to spots. It's been interesting watching him develop more in the passing. And, like, listening to, they had John Wall on the broadcast for, like, a segment of the game. I want to say it's the second game. And they were talking about, but Wall has previous experience with Rob Dillingham. He said he's known him since Rob was in seventh grade and that Rob reached out to him about, hey, they're moving me. They want me to do more point guard things. How do you strike the balance between looking for my own shot and looking for others? And John made this point about, hey, when you're in transition, go ahead and look for your shot. When you're in the half court, set up everyone else, at least early on. So then it makes it easier for everyone involved as the game goes on. So like one, it was just cool to hear that. But two, it was interesting to just watch that kind of play out in real time, at least second quarter onwards. In the first quarter, hey, Rob got the shots up in the same game. I want to say it was either 6 or 7 shot attempts within the first 4 minutes. It's like, ah, the aggression is here. But then you get to see the shot creation flashes. You can see I can boogie with the handle. I can get you off balance. I can get 2 feet in the paint, if not at the rim altogether. And once I enter 18 feet, you don't know what I'm going to do. I can hit you with a hezzy and get deeper. I can go right into a pull-up. I can take one more dribble and get into a floater. If you commit too much, I can make these basic reads as a passer. He's going to have to build off of those. But like you can see the early flat, you can see why Minnesota's so intrigued with him. And as I kind of zoom out, because I want to say it was Tim Connelly said, no, we intend for him to play early. Like, we're not giving up this kind of capital for you to just sit and learn for a year. Like, we are going to give you a little bit of playing time in this regular season. I am curious to see, like, what the minutes with him and Anthony Edwards going to look like, assuming that we see some of those during the regular season. Because I think there's a situation to where, one, if the shot is there for Rob, like, he's going to be valuable off the ball and playing off of Ant that way. But beyond that, because he can create as well as he does, like, it does kind of give you an element that Minnesota didn't really have, to where I will just look for my shot and be comfortable with it, and Ant doesn't have to spoon feed everyone. Him being able to take pressure off of Anthony Edwards to just get his own for a couple of minutes, I think that fits his play style. That kind of microwave element could help Minnesota overall. So I am excited about that portion. Defensively, I like the effort. But we will keep an eye on what the screen navigation looks like. And like similar to Reed, when he is matched up with bigger players, what is that containment going to look like? Is he able to bother the base or bother the ball on the way up at all? Or will he just kind of be wiped away because the guy he's guarding is bigger than him? It's just going to be a general question that I have. I want to watch more of him to get a firmer answer on that. But offensively, like, he's incredibly fun in space. He's very quick and get to an array of shots. And I think that scoring can be valuable for Minnesota.
Could not resist the Mike Conley slander as far as looking for it's the own shot. Slander, I see you. Salute, Nikias. I think with Rob Dillingham, you see why Minnesota spent what they spent to add that kind of talent to this kind of team. And I think you could see what he can do offensively on ball and off ball. So I think the first thing that jumped out to me in that second game was, all right, pick and roll, 2 on the ball. Looks like he pre-read it and picked up his dribble too early, and he somehow still got the pass there. I was like, I'm intrigued. And then he's spaced. He ends up getting a 3-point shot. I'm intrigued. Pull up 3. Or no, he went downhill, finished in the lane, and then I think he went to a pull up 3. I'm like, okay, I now understand the offensive package and what they're working with. That's an element they didn't necessarily have. So that's going to be a plus for them. I think defensively, it's going to be a work in progress. Now, a lot of question marks about his defense. I think it's fair. I think the Minnesota context is going to help him to a degree, because if you want to play those minutes, you are going to have to defend at a certain level. And so he's going to have to learn and understand at least the basic positionings. I think there was a play against Indiana where, you know, he was just in space, went under, never got contact with the ball. Then it was a dribble handoff, no switch. They didn't get burned on it, but it's like, okay, you can't have those breakdowns. You can't have those kind of mistakes. You have to find a way to get more solid, use kind of your speed and your activity to your advantage. The effort's been there, because I'm sure they've asked him to do it, but that's kind of where you project, okay, you've got to find a way to get that done. I think he's got a comfort as far as being able to play on ball and off ball, which fits with what Minnesota wants to do. I think the off ball portion is going to be interesting to see, okay, how do you handle the physicality of it? Are you ready to cut with pace at times if people are looking to bump you off? But I think it's everything you would want to see if you're in Minnesota for what you are now looking to do going forward.
Mm-hmm. And then just to quickly bounce off what you said, because Rob talked about a lot of that, which you hit on post game of the Indy game. To where he's like, I want to get better at dealing with contact when guys are trying to bump me off, when I'm trying to call pick and rolls. Once I get that, I know I'm going to be good at running a bunch of ball screens. And like, even within that, you saw the comfort. Hey, if this guy's behind me at all, like, I can just kind of lead the dance and get to my shot. And you mentioned the late pass he got to the big there when he got to. There was what the double. I don't want to call it double drag. It was a double pick and roll. Where he comes off, he's able to throw a lob once he gets 2 on the ball there. It's like, okay, he sees some of this stuff. And again, like, you don't need him to be Chris Paul as a passer to make this work. You just got to be able to nail the easy as a playmaker. Because again, like, I'm anticipating, if it's going to be second unit, he's either going to be playing alongside Anthony Edwards, like hybrid second unit, Ant plus bench, and you're going to be playing off the ball anyway. Or if it is just going to be pure second unit stuff, you got Joe Ingles there too. So, like, he's not going to be tasked with running the entire second unit offense. He will be able to split those duties. So his comfort being able to flow on and off the ball is going to be very important. So I think he's going to be fine. And I'm glad you mentioned the Minnesota context. If you have questions about your guards, having that collective size, 3 through 5, is sure a way to kind of limit some of the negative impact that guard may have on your defensive infrastructure. So he's in a great spot. Excited to watch him grow. Excited to watch him play a little bit more. Heading to Utah with Cody Williams, brother of Jalen Williams, 21 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists against Dallas. I was actually able to see some of this live. Walked into Cox, got to see a little bit there.
Is this when you had the nice view?
yes, but we'll get to that. But the first thought I had was like, man, he is a lot taller than I thought he was. That is really interesting for like a wing-ish prospect there. But you see very early on, if there is an advantage at all, like he is very quick and dutiful about taking advantage of whatever the advantage is. You got 2 to the ball. I can get rid of it. If someone else draws 2 and I have a lane, I will cut into open space, or I will just catch the ball on the move, drive immediately, and I can make a decision from there. And so just watching how quickly he processed the floor was a positive for me. It just felt like he did and was a little bit of everywhere. Some pick and roll reps, just some primary drive reps, had some fun filling lanes and transition and attacking there. Again, if someone else created an advantage, we'll take and knock down a shot, or let me just attack this space. Let me relocate to make it easier for everyone else to relocate. He just seems like a really smart basketball player. So just very quick thoughts there. Like I was trying to get situated in my seat, saw a little bit, wait for the next game, all the good stuff. So I don't have super deep thoughts on Cody yet, but those are some of the early things that pop for me. Like, oh, he is a basketball player, as basic as that sounds. And so like within Utah's ecosystem, with the movement that they have, the way they're able to invert stuff, I think he's going to be a very fun fit within that offense, especially as their guards continue to perk up within that system. Well, we will see if Laurie Markin is going to be there at the start of the year. But he seems someone very well equipped to play off of others, which I think is going to be the early role for him, regardless of if Laurie's there or not. So those are some nice flashes that I enjoyed. Did you have Cody Williams thoughts?
Well, I think the one cool thing with Cody Williams is watching the progress from the Utah Summer League to now Vegas, to where there's a little bit more comfort. I like the straight line drives. I still think physicality may bother him, but if he's involved, you can kind of see the potential when he's spaced. I can play on ball. I can play off ball. There's some times where he got the catch and it was, okay, am I going to swing? Am I going to shoot? But you could see the progress. I think that's where it's like, okay, having seen what it was before, it was like, okay, I see the potential. Do we see enough of it? Be able to kind of see it in more live action is probably a positive. So I think his size is going to be good. I think his driving ability is good. It's just going to be, okay, can the physicality match up? Is the shot going to be there? Will the defense be there? How complete will that be? But he fits into what Utah wants to do, and you see the potentials there.
Okay, got you. Then close it out with at least a lot of talents for now. Matas Buzelis for the Chicago Bulls, 15 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 blocks against Milwaukee in their opening game. And then against Golden State was a loss, but 28 points. He really lit it up in the second half in particular. But 28 points, 5 rebounds, 2 steals in that second game with Matas. For me, like I got to see some of him in G League, but again, wasn't super deep player scout, so I'm not going to talk outside of my neck on that front. But like he can just get to so many different types of shots. That isn't always a good thing. Shot selection is obviously very important. But with him not having the tightest handle as of now and him just being like a bigger / taller wing, it's very encouraging that shot clock goes down, I can get to something clean for me. Like he just doesn't really care about contest, which again can be a bad thing in the wrong hands. But if you're, you know, within a summer league lens, what can you do and what can you project? Inside the arc, I could just get to an array of pull-ups, not get the side steps. He was spaced a lot in the first 2 games. Think back to the Milwaukee game in particular. Doesn't care about contest. You close out on me strong, I still have a high release point, a little bit off to the left. I can get this shot off clean. It does not matter if you're there or not. And so if the jumper ends up being real for him, he's going to be a tough shot taker and maker both on and off the ball. And I think that could be valuable for a Chicago team that just lost one of their best creators in DeMar DeRozan, has been looking to trade another one in Zach LaVine. So anyone that can handle those kind of tough shot making responsibilities, things going to help in trying to fill that void. I am not saying he's going to be DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine level good. I don't know. I have to watch more of him. But just in terms of filling the void of those particular shots, like I love how comfortable he was with those. In transition, he's just nasty. And I think that's punctuated by the highlight flush that he had in the second game. But not afraid of contact at all, not afraid of contest at all. Like I think, you know, hearing him talk pre-draft, and we're kind of laughing at some of the quotes that came out with him. that kind of shines through on the court. He's not afraid at all. And like defensively, I'm curious to see like what his best position is going to be defensively. Is that going to be defending threes? Is it going to be defending fours? Like what kind of strength stuff comes into play there? But at least seeing as I look for guys, how are you prepping when you're not directly involved? If you do have tag responsibilities, how early are you creeping in? Stuff like that. He generally did well with that kind of stuff. So that seems encouraging. Again, read out the box score. He did have two blocks in the first game, two steals in the second one. So like you have the a little bit of event creation there. I do want to see one, just what Chicago's scheme is going to be this year defensively and how he fits into that. So again, I want to watch more of Matas before I give even deeper takes on him, but some fun flashes early on from him.
Just give a take. Somebody's only two games in. You good.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm seeing.
The kid wants it. That's all I know. That's important. I don't know necessarily how he slots in, but Chicago's got an intriguing array of variety of kind of young wing talent. And if you're going to have someone who you don't have to worry, he's going to let it fly, there's a fit there. So I'm intrigued to see what that looks like going forward because you can't necessarily always teach confidence. And so if he's going to play with that level of confidence, that's going to be fun. I think defensively, one thing you got to look at is what is his positioning on the weak side? How active is he? Is he ready to navigate screens? He's got a little bounce to him, which is good. But at the same time, is that a I'm sure of what I'm doing bounce, or is that a I'm a little nervous about what I'm doing bounce, which is okay. He's a young rookie. I mean, you expect that. But that's kind of the little things you want to poke at and see. But that kid's going to run transition. He's going to score. He's not afraid if he's spaced to let it fly, as you mentioned. And I think overall, if you're Chicago and you're pivoting and moving into a different direction, okay, we have some younger guys who we know can kind of fill some of these holes and we can kind of put together some versatile lineups to a degree. So it should be fun to watch him grow. Like, again, as Nakia said, this is the first takeaway for us. We'll get to the next one.
There we go. There we go. Some other quick shout outs before we move past the summer league portion. Very firmly in the I need to see more before I give like definitive takes or anything like that. Ron Holland with 13 points in his debut. Like the drive seemed fun. The comfort inside the arc seems fun. Again, just want to see more before I have more details on you on that front. This is my first watch with Ron. So just quickly on that front, shout out to some of the second year guys that proved very early on, like, oh, I don't need to be here. Jaime
Jaquez. Yeah, the Nakia sophomore report. Let's go.
Jaime Jaquez Jr. with 29, 11, and 5 against Boston. Went to the line 11 times. Still very comfortable creating in one-on-one situations. Will put you on his back and get into the post if necessary. Also, just him coming off wide action and just driving downhill 80 miles per hour was a lot of fun. So that was cool to see. Do not anticipate us seeing any more of Jaime after that game. But a quick hat tip to him. As I mentioned earlier, Cam Whitmore through two games, 22.5 points, 9 rebounds. Are you ready for this one, Steve?
Yeah.
4 assists per game across the first two for Cam Whitmore. As came a little bit of a running joke. Hey, when Cam touches the ball, he's going to shoot that thing. When he played last year, scored efficiently, so not completely a bad thing. But hey, he wanted to get him up. Watching the passing from him through the first couple of games has been a hilarious experience because he's still by and large looking for his shots and he is attacking with evil intentions and he is jamming on folks in transition, sprinkling in reverse dunks in traffic. It's a whole thing. He's still very much looking to score the ball. But when he passes the ball, hey, let me sprinkle in a little flare, a little flick when I'm getting this off. Let me get to this behind-the-back pass real quick. And it's just like, so you can do this. However, .. That's very fun for me. But no, just in terms of the physical talent, like Cam Whitmore, we don't need to see anymore from Cam in this setting. Unless they are just legitimately going to play him at point guard and say, hey, you are running 30 ball screens. Let's get your passing reads up. Unless it's that, I don't need to see any more Cam Whitmore. He is too good for this setting. Yeah, this Rockets team is good. We don't need to see him. What's up?
I have a question. Now, if you said you had question marks about the passing, do you really want him to get 30 pick and roll reps?
That's fair. That's fair. Because then, like, 27 of them with him just getting to the pull-up or drives. I understand. But you get my general point. Like, unless it's very clear, hey, we want you to pass in this game directives. We don't need to see any more Cam Whitmore. He's that guy is good. Brandon Podziemski, who I guess technically in trade rumors, we'll get to that a little bit later, but 18.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, a steal and a half across his first two games. Also shooting, I think, 50% from three, which is pretty solid. But he's doing all the things we saw from him last year. flying in for rebounds, making the right passes, knocking down shots, cutting, setting the occasional screen off ball when necessary, flying around defensively. I think it's fair to say he is too good for this setting. We don't need to see any more from Pods. Don't get hurt. You're good. Quick shout out to Julian Strother, who we didn't get to see as much of as we would like to see in Denver last year, as this season was pretty much cut short with injury. He came back healthy, but at that point, he's out of rotation. They're trying to get ready for the playoffs, all that good stuff. Letting it fly, proving to the world once again he is a premier bucket getter, at least as a prospect. 28.5 points, averaging 28.5 points across his first two games. 22 of his 40 field goal attempts have been threes. Shooting 9 of 22 from three through the first two. Letting it fly in, not just some catch-ups, but also coming off of movement, self-creating some of those as well. Denver is going to need Julian Strother this year. As dramatic as that sounds, they're just going to need his shooting, period, as Denver is not a team that takes a high volume of threes. I think he's going to go a long way to helping that cause. And just in general, they're going to need a little bit more scoring punch off the bench this year. So if he's able to stay healthy, it'll be nice to see him build off of the summer league showing. Other quick shout outs. I was in, you made the joke about the nice seats or whatever. The primary game I watched there was Thunder Raptors. Javon Freeman Liberty looked very good in that game. Very comfortable creating his own shot, looking for others as well. Just fun ball handling game for him. Feels very much like a, what's the whole baseball adage? Like you're a quadruple A player. So like you're better than triple A, but not quite major league. I feel like Javon's kind of in that realm as an NBA guy right now. I want to see a little bit more from him. But like very fun game in that one at the very least. Nikola Jurišić in it from Atlanta. In a game featuring Alex Sarr and Zachary Risochet, one of the first players that popped for me in that game was Nikola. Because I don't know what kind of passes that man was throwing. Complimentary. I don't know what kind of passes that man was putting on film like the first 3.5, 4 minutes of that game. I was like, yo, this is a 6'8 ball handler that is slinging the pill. This is a lot of fun. And now he's hurting. We're not going to see any more from him. So get well soon. But did want to give him the shout out as we're talking about veterans that we don't need to see any more from. Justin Champagny, the brother of Julian, Justin the Wizard player, still shoots well, cuts well, competed defensively, some fun drives from him as well. Like you are just an NBA veteran, sir. You and Eugene Omoruyi, y'all are good. Y'all are NBA players. We're good. Y'all can just sit. And then very quickly, Adam Bona from Philly, as we talked about, bigs that have the super high motors in a summer league setting. That's him. That is him. Good luck keeping him off the glass. Just good luck dealing with him, period. He's just a strong guy. He's going to lean on you, all that good stuff. It's just a very draining experience. If you're a 2K player, the old bruiser badge, bruiser slash brick wall now, just drains the stamina when you have to deal with all those bumps throughout the course of a game. You don't want to deal with that. You don't want to deal with that. So a lot of fun. I want to watch more of him. I want to watch more of him and Jared McCain, naturally. But like, yeah, just want to give him the quick hat tip there. And there you go. So yeah. I didn't do the full Nikai thing with like 18 people.
I was going to pull the curtain back and I thought better of it. And then you said that. So I'm going to pull the curtain back just a little bit. See what I did there? A little visual trick. But I asked you, hey, do you have the Nikai list? And you said, no, I don't. And you, let me just mention some players you did not name. Right? Okay. Nick Smith Jr. didn't make the cut. I was expecting that. I was expecting a little Brandon Miller. Let's see. Keon Johnson didn't make the cut. Orlando Robinson didn't
make
the
Rockets cut. Another Rockets guy.
Imani Bates.
You want me to be completely honest with you?
No.
Because you...
No, go ahead.
That's crazy. No, I was going to say, because you asked me about Brandon Miller before the show. And I was like, yeah, very much felt like a... He didn't shoot well, but he played super well in his game. I think he had, 23-9, I want to say, in that opening game. I don't think we're going to see more Brandon Miller. Honestly, I'm just kind of saving my Charlotte thoughts. I'm going to be honest with you. Because, like, that...
Since when have you decided to save the Charlotte Hornet thoughts? And why have you decided to save the Charlotte Hornet thoughts now? Why is now the time? We literally had our first appearance on this very channel, and you went on a 37-second diatribe about the Charlotte Hornets. And now, because you want to praise Cam Whitmore and Pods, now we got a Hornets fan on the YouTube calling me like, Nikai, so we like the Hornets. And now I got to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that.
Hey, if a YouTube commenter says Nikias of all people does not appreciate the Hornets, then that is just someone that has not listened to our show. Like that's okay. It's not that'll make you a bad person, but it just could not be further from the truth. Second, that very reaction is exactly why I'm saving the Charlotte thoughts, because you know how I get when I get laser focused in on a Hornets thing when like I am one of like three media people that care about the Hornets like that, and you know not gonna disrespect the Charlotte Hornets fan base because they've. One, they're there as someone that lives in Charlotte. I can attest that there are Charlotte fans that exist, et cetera. They've also just been through a whole lot of stuff with this organization over the last few years. We'll leave it there. But like, I know how I get with the Hornets. So I was like, let me just do my Hornets thing versus sprinkling in all the time. Cause I'm trying a different approach. So I don't annoy you and the other listeners. You know what I mean? So when we get to Hornets talk and them being healthy and some of the young guys, I'm glad you mentioned Nick Smith Jr. Again, I'll just save the Hornets talk. So I can just do a Hornets thing, get it all out the way. And hopefully that's an easier process for everyone else.
I want to give a quick shout out to Tristan Da Silva. Like he's that. Fun to watch in Orlando. Hey, tall person who can do some things and fly off screens and create off ball and run pick and roll and also apparently shoot. Yep. Welcome to the Orlando Magic, where we really appreciate people with that exact skill set. Mm-hmm. They did it again. That's all I have.
Okay, fair enough. And again, we'll circle back to more Summer League things. If not the next episode, then probably the episode after that. Once Summer League concludes, we have the championship winning team and all that good stuff. But that concludes the Summer League portion for right now. Just getting to some quick free agency updates and other NBA news.
Actually, wait. Oh, what's up? I don't mean to cut you off. A very funny bit that you said, I don't think we'll do the 55 minutes of Summer League content. And we did exactly 55 minutes of Summer League content. I just want to point that out.
That's
every time you say we're not going to do something, we do it.
I should probably just stop saying that then, huh? I just came in and was like, oh yeah, we got quick thoughts. You know, it's not like a playoff preview to where we have, you know, back of hand knowledge and all the good stuff. It's like, okay, these first thoughts be quick. And we do the dunker spot thing. So thank you or we apologize, whichever one is appropriate. Anyway, on the free agency note, talked about the Wizards a little bit earlier within the lens of Alex Sarr and I guess Justin Champagne. Sadiq Bey signing a 3-year deal worth $20 million with the Wizards. Sadiq Bey, but not sure how much playing time he gets in year one as he recovers from, I think, the torn ACL. But we'll see what the next 2 years of that contract looks like, if he's going to be there or if this is going to be a trade chip type situation, get like a lower mid-tier salary on the books for Washington as they are very much in the early stages of the rebuild. So I want to quickly shout out Sadiq there. Paul Reed was waived by the Sixers as they were making some of their initial free agency moves. The Detroit Pistons claiming Paul Reed off of waivers. Do you have any Paul Reeds to Detroit thoughts, Steve?
I had more Sadiq Bey to Washington thoughts than
Paul Reed. Oh, my fault. Thoughts. My fault. Well, we will rewind.
It's fine because Paul Reed is kind of your bag. It's fine. I mean, we're fine. I think it was a good value move for the Wizards to be able to get Sadiq Bey. Obviously, he's going to have to recover, but to be able to add him to that team going forward, that's a good quality move that will probably pay off next year. So salute to them for that. Paul Reed to Detroit. I get it. I'm pretty sure we still have to spend more money, but also quality third big in the rotation can help give you some activity, give you some roles. Look, if there's nothing else in Detroit, I feel very confident. We're not playing two big lineups. There's going to be some shooters and spacing and we're going to have some rollers. That's all I know. That's all I got.
They just can't help it. They just can't help it. Again, my apologies for speed running past the Sadiq Bey portion. My
fault. Man, you good.
On the Paul Reed front, it's so funny that we're talking about Detroit within the lens of like the James Wise, the Indiana sign. It's like, well, Detroit, maybe they're not doing the too big thing anymore. Well, let's see what's going on here. And then they claim Paul Reed, which I would imagine we're going to see like Paul Reed and Isaiah Stewart together or Paul Reed and Jalen Dern together at some point. That's not me saying we should see that. But I am not going to be surprised if we see some of those minutes at some point. So I don't think we're done here.
We're done. We ain't got Tobias, Simone, and Asar Thompson to be playing two bigs. No.
I say that they should.
There's a more likelihood that Paul Reed don't play than Detroit plays two bigs. Get that out of here.
Okay, but we're going to clip that portion. If we get to game one, it's the Detroit-Miami, 2:17 left in the third quarter. Here comes Paul Reed and Isaiah Stewart.
Okay, if that's situational, that's different than like it being the pure rotation. Don't be petty. Don't be petty.
Fine. Actually, which I don't know how that brought that to my mind, but as I jokingly brought up Miami, Nikola Jovic suffering an injury overseas, which is not ideal considering Miami's still trying to figure out what's going on with the four in the front court and stuff. So get well soon. Hopefully that's not a major injury that lingers into the regular season or puts his regular season in doubt. So get more info on that front. I will pass that along probably on the next episode of the pod, but just want to sprinkle that in before I forgot. But back to the free agency portion. Taj Gibson signing with the Charlotte Hornets, vet minimum deal. Again, not going to do the full Hornets thing. Nice for the Hornets to get a veteran in the room. Taj, one of the best locker room guys in the league by a whole lot of accounts. And when you do need him to log some minutes, he at the very least will screen hard and play hard on defense. And you want that kind of tangible effort on display for the younger roster. Do you have Taj Gibson thoughts?
You're throwing it to me on the Charlotte Hornets again.
Ah, I see. All right, moving on.
Quality. I'm glad Taj Gibson's back. Quality veteran leadership for the Charlotte Hornets locker room. And he won't have Tibbs, who's going to play him 87 minutes in three nights. Didn't he have that moment? Didn't he play all the minutes and was retired against Charlotte? Someone looked that up. Y'all remember when Taj came and he was like, shout out to Taj. I think that was against Charlotte. My fault.
And then it just turned into the Vince card. I got one more in me. Very cool. Shout out to Taj Gibson, man. Very quickly on the welcome back trail, Jalen Brunson agreeing to a 4-year, $156.5 million extension. Passed up a lot of money to lock in the money now, which, hey, that's a lot of money. I also think life changes quickly in the NBA. You're always like an injury away. So anytime you're faced with the prospect of getting like nearly $40 million a year, like it's hard for me to say that's a bad decision. But him him not waiting the extra year, it helps the Knicks retain all the talent that he's got. What makes it easier to keep them all together, which I think was the primary thing for Jalen Brunson. But also worth noting, there is a player option on the last year of that extension. So if he opts out of that, he will then be up for a potential 4-year, $323 million extension. I think that would be starting in his age 32 season. So we will see if he ends up getting that. But at least that possibility exists for him to kind of make up the money later in the deal. So just a quick hat tip to Jalen Brunson. He has turned himself into, if not a full-blown superstar, at the very least he's on the cusp of that. What he's been able to do in New York. He has already been one of the most impactful free agent signings in New York Knicks history. And that team and that fan base absolutely loves Jalen Brunson. And so it's just really cool to see him lock in with a fan base that has embraced him to this degree. That's all I had on the Brunson portion of the program. Did you have Brunson thoughts?
I just found it interesting, the dynamic between the rumored deal that he could have gotten from a certain team, and then the amount of money he's currently slated to make on this deal, where he turned down money where he could have made more. Like, I just feel like there's a little bit of a circle moment there for me. But yeah. Based on the understanding that I've sat down, I've read, because again, these are eye-popping numbers, just insane numbers we're talking here. And hopefully, it's still a lot of money that he's making. But for them to be able to at least keep this window open as opposed to being in a certain stage where, hey, this is fun, but we no longer can do this, there's probably more value in that. So it'd be interesting to see what they do going forward. But, hey, they got this group together for a reason. You got to ride it out. Salute to Jalen Brunson for that.
All right. There we go. We'll speed run through the rest of these, then I'll ask if you have any quick thoughts there. Kyle Lowry and KJ Martin back in Philly. I think a one-year vets minimum deal for Kyle Lowry, 2-year, $16 million for KJ Martin. Josh Okogie back in Phoenix, a 2-year deal worth $16 million. The second year of that is non-guaranteed. Veet Krejci in Atlanta showcased some really fun things for them last season. A 4-year, $10 million deal for him. Johnny Juzang in Utah getting a 4-year, $12 million deal after, I want to say he was on a two-way last year for Utah. I think he was on a two-way last year. So now just getting a standard NBA contract. So salute to him. Any of those names pop for you?
KJ Martin and Josh Okogie, we might have to make a trade at some point. Salute to them, though. Good to see him back in the same places. I think this could actually be a really good fit for KJ Martin. Lowest of keys, if they're going to trend into small ball, we've seen how he plays in that kind of setting. So that could be really fun for him. Kyle Lowry returning is good. Okogie, hey.
It's an opportunity.
Hey, Phoenix needs.
We need defense.
We need as much as we can get right now. So I get it.
There we go. And again, I'll just quickly shout out Veet. As the Hawks, just very quietly, again, they may not be done this offseason, but as of July 15th, quietly just a lot more size on the wings overall. Like, I think if you're going to keep Trey, like putting as much size and versatility around him as possible is going to be helpful. Like, Veet shot, made plays with the ball in his hands, defended his tail off, took on some tough defensive assignments last year as well. Once he factored more into the rotation, locking him down for 4 years, 10 mil. I think there's some non-guaranteed years on top of that. So if he goes backwards, Atlanta can move on if they want to. But I like what I saw from Veet. I think naturally a lot of folks were frustrated with what they saw with Atlanta last year due to injuries and general malaise defensively and stuff like that. So not trying to put a bow on nonsense with Atlanta. But Veet was a bright spot for them. So it's just nice to see him get that deal. And speed running through this, Mike Muscala announcing his retirement was not something that I had on the bingo card, but want to shout out, give him the quick shout out. Stretch big, did some fun things. A plus minus monster during the OKC tenure before they became what they were last year. Hashtag we will not forget type beat. What else we got here? Shams Charania of The Athletic dropping his inside pass a little bit earlier today. Gave us the latest on Lauri Markkanen with the reporting that the Warriors have been the most engaged team for Lauri Markkanen in recent weeks. And a proposal has been discussed around Moses Moody, multiple firsts, multiple pick swaps, and multiple second rounders. Utah naturally is like, actually, can we get all of your young talent, please? Can we get Pods, Kuminga, Moody, and picks? And Golden State's like, absolutely not. We're not going to do that. That's just the nature of negotiation. Hey, we want your really good player. Can we do it for as little as possible? Other teams like, hey, we will give you our really good player. Give us literally everything. There's always going to be like a meeting of the middle if there's a trade to be had there. So I guess the only question I'll toss to you on this front, Steve, and obviously if you have general thoughts, you can give them. But the only question I have for you, I don't think Golden State is going to give up Pods. Would you be willing to give up Jonathan Kuminga to bring Lauri Markkanen in? Or is Kuminga, will Kuminga be like a deal breaker for you?
I'd be willing to. Okay. Depending on the package, obviously I don't want to swing the home run. And I can understand maybe, I don't want to say the hesitation, but we found what he can do here. But I could also understand, hey, it took a while for us to get here. We know what Lauri can do to elevate. So I don't think it would be like the deal breaker. I think for Utah, it's more like, hey, we would like more than just that. And if you're Golden State, okay, we understand. But also, you know, we would, you know, give me all you got for it. It's fine. We don't want to do all that.
Darn it. We want that man right there. moving on. The Clippers are exploring trades for Russell Westbrook, who opted into his contract early this offseason, but he is not long for the Los Angeles Clippers. The Nuggets reportedly the front runners to sign Russell Westbrook if he is waived or bought out. That also comes from Shams. And the Grizzlies exploring trades for Zaire Williams, as the Grizzlies are looking to get healthier slash get their best player back for more consistent play this season. They should be really good if they are healthy. Kind of feel bad for Zaire. Fun rookie season. Wasn't as consistent the year after. And now, like, hey, Vince Williams, you are also good. And Desmond Bane is even better. And we got Marcus Smart. And we might play Smart, Ja, and Bane together. And it just turns into a numbers game very quickly.
It's the nature of the league, man. Finding a home is hard. And Zaire showed a lot of flashes, and it looked like he was going to elevate into that role. That injury came at probably the worst time for him as far as his development and where he was about to spot and raise up, because that's the other side of next man up. If next man up continues to happen, then, hey, how many we got in here? Mm-hmm. That's just part of the program.
That is tough. So we will see where he lands, assuming a deal is done at some point this offseason. But a quick shout out to Zaire. Like, he's shown some fun things. Like, I think the defense is pretty real for him. Got to see where the shot lands, but like, comfortable working second side as a ball handler. So we will see. All right. Before we head out of here, I think we got to see the first half of the Team USA Australia game before we started recording. The game's been up on my TV. Naturally, haven't been able to watch as closely as we've been literally recording the pod. But new starting lineup for Team USA. I imagine they're just in the experimentation phase, but a new starting lineup. You got Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum in the lineup. How did you feel about that from what you've seen, or did anything in particular from the game stand out for you for what you saw?
Well, that was fun. Now, it was one of those back and forth ones where Team USA did pull away and then Australia did come back. So it kind of went back and forth. So I think that's a positive for Team USA to have to figure out some of those moments. It's interesting to see them put together Steph, Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum, LeBron, and Joel Embiid. That's really five talented players. And then I was thinking, man, Drew Holiday's defense was so good. Why isn't Drew Holiday there? And then I remembered, oh, yeah, Kevin Durant still has yet to play. Yeah. So if you're telling me the ideal lineup is probably Steph, Tatum, KD, LeBron, and Joel Embiid, I'm intrigued. I think for me, the key is just how much can they get flow-wise from the first unit. I thought we saw some good flashes. I think Embiid's size and his ability to shoot should be more intriguing as this goes on. I think that LeBron and Stephen Curry screening for each other is really fun. But the little things they can do flow-wise, as far as we got to pick them on one side, oh, that's Steph Curry space, oh, he screens for LeBron, like those kind of things are fun. I did admire kind of the double-down effect on the second unit because now Drew's not starting, so it's like, hey, we have Anthony Davis, and we also have Bam Adebayo, and we also have Drew Holiday.
Good luck scoring.
Here's Devin Booker and Tyrese Halliburton doing things as well. So I think there's a nice blend. So it's kind of fun to watch them kind of mix and match and find their way. And they had control of the game, kind of lost track of it. So I'd be interested to see kind of how the comeback came on. So no disrespect to Australia, but from what I saw early, once they kind of figured out their roles, you saw the shooting was there, you saw the movement was there, the flow was there, the defense was pretty good throughout. And I think if they can figure out what they want to do with that first unit, that's where it gets really interesting because that's a lot of talent. Now we have the mindset on the other end. We can mix and match and do different things. So I think that's where it gets really fun.
Okay, there we go. Good stuff there. And because you are so good at this, my question was going to be, hey, so when Kevin Durant comes back, what do you think their ideal starting lineup is going to be? And you just flowed into that naturally. So this is why you are the best of the best. I would just say, kind of chuckled at the Anthony Edwards, I'm the number one option thing. And then he just, what do you have, like 11 early for Team USA? And this one's like, you know, he just does this. He just does him. And here are these drives. Here are these deep pull-ups. Here's this step back real quick as you are going the wrong way and I'm going to the left. And I'm just going to cash this in. It's like, okay. There's not much you can do with Anthony Edwards, period. He's just a very fun player in general. But on the international stage, they're just aren't many people that can stay in front of him. And just him knowing that is kind of a fun ideal, especially when you zoom out. It's like, hey, he's on the court with LeBron and Steph right now. And he's just like, nah, it's my turn. I got this. And it's like, okay. So it's very fun that with Steph and LeBron in particular, like obviously they can play off of each other, but like they are used to just shouldering ridiculous offensive loads. And now they're in a setting where, oh, we can just dump this down to Joel, huh? Just kind of chill if necessary. Oh, Anthony Edwards can just do this. Oh, Jason Tatum can just do his step back thing or just put his head down and we can just kind of play off of that. This is a fun experience. You get to be off ball and not have to carry everything, which is also just terrifying for everyone that faces Team USA that this is the kind of dynamic that they can pose. So very excited to see what this team's going to look like when Kevin Durant's in tow. And as usual, the second unit for Team USA is that is some chef's kiss stuff, particularly the defense, and they get to get out in transition. And best of luck to you and your loved ones on that front.
Hey, can I pop you real quick?
Yeah, what's up?
Jock Landale, 20 points in 27 minutes.
Huh.
Shout interesting. Out to the goose.
Anyway. It's almost like, you know, it's fine. I will save it for the Dunker Spot watch parties. But with that, as we have to go and do some teaching things, etc., thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google. But Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. This is episode one of two that we do every week. So YouTube episodes is on this channel every Tuesday. That's the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. So we're here every Tuesday. And then there's the audio only version at the end of the week. Those episodes are longer. We have fun. We have guests, etc. So if you do like what we do, there is more of us outside of just the YouTube episodes. So check us out. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having some fun conversations and sharing some funny tweets in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties, watching plenty of hoop, particularly on the W side right now as they are in season, at least for now, because we are about to hit the All-Star break / Olympic break. But we're going to be doing some fun things. As Steve kind of joked during the intro, the college football game is out. I think we're going to try to get some college football things together for friends in the group. So we'll be having some fun during the Olympic break in between watching the hoops if you can. So if you just want to rock with some cool people and have some fun with us, come rock with us. The link is in the podcast description. It is free to create your profile, no shenanigans. But beyond that, we appreciate y'all, and we will catch y'all later in the week.
Good show, Nikai. That transfer portal about to hurt your feelings.